For my Shana Aleph, I went to Keren Biavnet. And when it was Parshas Noach, so someone got up on Parshas Noach. Let me get a little bit of background. Keren Biavnet is a Dati Lumi yeshiva where the Israeli section of the yeshiva, they're all going and they're doing the army. So somebody got up on Parshas Noach and said that the rest of the world is like the Mabul, and Eretz Yisrael, Medinat Yisrael, is the Teva. And everybody has to come to Medinat Yisrael because it's a Mabul out there in the rest of the world. The following year, I went to a yeshiva called Tzvi Koshelevsky's. It was more of a yeshivish place. And that year, someone got up and Parshas Noach and said that outside the Beis Midrash, it's a Mabul. And everybody has to come to the Teva, which is the Beis Midrash, to protect themselves from the Mabul of outside the Beis Midrash. And the next year, I went to Yeshiva University, and someone got up and said that the Beis Midrash, the Teva is like the Beis Midrash, but Noach left the Teva and taught the lessons of the Teva to the rest of the world, and he went out there and taught the lessons. And that's what everybody needs to do, they need to leave the Beis Midrash and teach the lessons of the Beis Midrash. So after those 3 years and those three different Torah on Parshas Noach, I was a little bit confused. What am I actually supposed to learn from Parshas Noach? One thing that I knew for sure is that everybody seems to have the way they look at things, and then probably every week they think the Parsha is proving it to them over and over and over again, because they keep on projecting their view into whatever it is that they see. I remember I took a course in psychology, and they were telling us that there's a certain type of diagnostic test called the thematic apperception test, that when a client comes into the psychologist, let's say they want to try to understand what's going on in the internal world of the client. So they put in front of him like a picture, and in the picture there's some type of a scene. You'll see somebody happy and somebody sad, and maybe like a car or a tree and something that spilled or broke. And then they tell the client, tell me a story of what you see over here in this picture. And through the story that the client makes up when he's describing the scene over there, the psychologist, if he's well trained, could understand the inner happenings in this guy's internal world. Now, anybody sitting in front of a psychologist who's telling him to analyze the picture is obviously thinking to himself, I know what you're trying to do. You think you're going to crack me open? You think you want me to figure out what's actually going on inside of me? So this is obviously not somebody that was just going to spit everything out because he has to use this test on him. So he's going to try to make up some friendly, happy, whatever story showing everything's okay. But it's not going to work because he can't help but tell over the story of what's going on inside of himself, because a person projects himself onto everything that it is that he sees. And that's the same idea you probably heard about the ink blot test, where they show you these ink blots and you can say, what picture do you see over here? And you see how they view things and how they see things and learn a lot about their personality by what they see in the different ink blots that you present in front of them. So I went to Yeshiva Flatbush High School, and used to be 60-70% Ashkenaz back then, and now it's just now that Nemet left, no, I don't know if it's Ashkenaz, but one of the things they had back then was junior senior seminar, where they get Madrichim who were in Yeshiva for a year or two to come back and be like the Madrich, and then they would have kids in junior and senior year go on this Shabbaton. So I came after, while I was in YU, I went on one of these Flapa Shabbatons to be a Madrich, and they had a session on Friday night. They went straight out to the point, and they called the session God. And you sat around in a circle, they split everybody up into different groups, co-ed of course, and the teacher passed around a piece of paper to everybody in the circle, which had the following types of people written on it. And I'll read them to you in a second, but she said to everybody, take a few moments to yourself and think, pick three things on this list and list, how do you view a Kadosh Baruch Hu? What is he to you? How do you see him? Okay, so try to do this to yourself in your head when I read you these names. I'm not going to call on anybody, don't worry. Father, judge, ruler, big brother, confidant, enemy, teacher, mother, creator, destroyer, king, shepherd, Menahel, policeman, principal, organizer, best friend, punisher, grandfather. And everybody thought to themselves, how do you view a Kadosh Baruch Hu in your life? So one thing that I thought to myself when everybody was thinking about this is, the people that I know over here in this circle, could I guess what they're going to say? Could I figure out, knowing their personality, how they view a Kadosh Baruch Hu? And I tried it out to myself, and I said, we had this, like, I had like a group of like six guys in my group, and I was thinking to myself, okay, one of these kids, something's very off with him. He has some type of level of Asperger's. He's very unconnected to anything. You ask him a question, he starts to spit back, you know, definitions from the dictionary or from the Encyclopedia Britannica. I don't know why they made me as Madrid. I don't know. But like very like cold, plain, emotionless. So I figure, okay, he's going to say things that are very definition oriented. He sees God as creator, king, judge, something like that. Nothing emotional, no actual connection. And then there was another guy in my group, completely opposite, super friendly, super social, warm, nice. Everybody liked him, popular, humble. So I thought, okay, fine, he's going to say something like father, like a relationship, but he also has a conscious, so he's going to say something like king, and something else that's more like emotional type, father, king, friend. And there were some girls in the group, and some of them I remembered back in high school. I thought, okay, fine, she's going to say something like confidant, sister, teacher, whatever it is. And when they went around the circle, and everybody said how they view a Kadosh Baruch Hu, everyone said what you could have predicted that they were going to say. The way they viewed Hashem was what you could have predicted it already ahead of time. And it was based on their own personality. So I remember I once said this idea over on a shidduch date. I didn't marry the girl, not because of her wrong response, when I got to this part of the idea, so she said, "Wow, that's so beautiful." So that means like if somebody is like a very gaivadic person, they can connect to like the gaiva and the honor of God. And if somebody is like a warm person, they could connect to like the mercy and the warmth of God, and somebody who's like angry to the anger of God. So I don't know how I said it. I was like, no. It's not that. I said, really, we know we're taught in Chazal that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the way that he runs the world, when he created it, he also created the way he's going to run it. And he runs the world with the Yud Gimel Midos HaRachamim, with the 13 attributes of mercy. That he Hashem Kerachem V'Chanun Erech Apayim V'Rav Chesed V'Emes, that he's patient and he's forgiving and he's merciful and compassionate, and therefore, if somebody wants to best understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu and best understand why he does things, they could only look at things through the eyeglasses of the Yugam Midas Harachamim, and therefore, the more compassionate a person is, the more patient a person is, the more merciful they are, the more loving that they are, they're in a much better place to understand why things in the world are happening. And their perception of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is more correct. We project our own personalities onto HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And when we're faced with different things, like we miss the bus, or we break our arm, Chas V'Shalom, or different difficulties that happen, and then we say, oh, why'd God do that to me? Doesn't he care that blank? Or why did he make me lose that thing? That's one reaction some people will have. Another reaction some people will have is, wow, Hashem must have been trying to save me from something. Maybe something would have happened if I would have been there on time, or what am I supposed to learn from this? What is Hashem trying to teach me? And the difference in these different reactions by the people is basically they're projecting their own personality onto HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and why would I do that to somebody if I would be him? Would be me punishing them or trying to hurt them? Or me trying to help somebody and me trying to teach something? And the more correct perspective is the perspective of somebody who's closer to the Yugal Amidas HaRachamim, because they're projecting onto HaKadosh Baruch Hu how he actually really does run the world. That's why in the Torah, some of you who ever started learning Olam Amidos, so in the beginning, he talks about how the Torah doesn't directly speak about, you know, a chiyuv in different midos. We learn about midos from Bahalach to Bedrachav, to go in the ways of Hashem. Just like Hashem is merciful, you should be merciful. Just like Hashem is forgiving, you should be forgiving. And one of the ideas behind that is because the only way to really understand the Torah, to really understand the mitzvos, is to make yourself more in the place of He that gave us the Torah, coming from a place of Yugim Amidas HaRachamim. There's a Rambam in Hilchos Shabbos that says something very jarring. He's talking about how if there's a Safek Pikuach Nefesh situation on Shabbos, where somebody's life might be at risk on Shabbos, and it's a question, it's a Safek whether it is or not. So the halacha is, you're chayev to break Shabbos to save their life. So the Rambam now addresses those that are hesitant to do that. And they would rather maybe somebody else did it instead of them, and they question, maybe I shouldn't break Shabbos. So the Rambam says the following. This is in Hilchos Shabbos, Perek Beis. V'asur litmameya b'chila Shabbos l'cholet sheyesh bo sakana. It's usur to delay in b'machal Shabbos for a chola that might be in danger. Shnemar shor yasa osam ha'adam v'chai b'hem. The pasuk says that when Hashem gave us the mitzvot, He gave us the mitzvahs to live with them. The mitzvahs aren't meant to kill us. We're meant to be alive when doing the mitzvahs. V'lo shiyamas behem. Ha'alamadata, says the Rambam. We see from that pasuk. She'ein mishpatei ha-Torah nekama ba'olam. The laws of the Torah isn't Hashem's revenge against the world. He's not trying to hurt us or kill us. El rachamim v'chesed v'sham ba'olam. All of the Targum mitzvahs are coming from a place of rachamim and chesed and shalom in the world. And now is the jarring line of the Rambam. He says, before I read the line, what would you call a person that decides, I'm too scared, I'm not going to be Mechal HaShabbos. I don't want to be Mechal HaShabbos. How could I break Shabbos? It's only a suffix whether he's going to die or not. So what would you call that guy? You have to give him a name. You might call him like a tzaddik shota, like a... You know, like a tzaddik, like a stupid tzaddik. He doesn't know what he's doing. He's too from an idiot, like a mean person. The Rambam calls him the following: Ve'elu haminim. A min is an apikoros, and those apikorsim that say that it's chil of Shabbos and you can't break Shabbos. And then he applies a pasuk to them. But that is so eye-opening. He calls such a person apikoros. And apikoros, the opposite. He has too much emuna. He seems to have too much emuna. He can't break Shabbos to save somebody's life. One of the things we see from over here is that when we talk about emuna in a Kadosh Baruch Hu, it's not just emuna in any Kadosh Baruch Hu, in any God, in any creator. It's the God of the Yugim Amidas HaRachamim. Not an evil God, not an angry God, not a vengeful God. But the God of the Yugim Amidas HaRachamim, and a lack of that, if somebody has a distorted picture of a Kadosh Baruch Hu and they interpret the world in that way, and the relationship with Hashem is in that way, that's apikorsus. That's a moon in the wrong place. So you could call it God, but your picture of it is incorrect and it's distorted. And the only way to really have the correct and the proper picture is when a person works on themselves. There's a midrash about the people of Nineveh, right? Nineveh was the city that Yonah was sent to tell them to be chozer b'tshuva, otherwise the Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to destroy all of you, the way he destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. So there's a midrash that said, that what do the people of Nineveh do? There's a pasuk that says, v'yitzaku el Hashem b'chazaka. They screamed out to Hashem with a lot of strength. How do you scream to Hashem with strength? So the midrash says, they took their wives and their children, and their animals, they tied them up, and they held knives to their head, and they said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we heard that you're a God of Rachamim. You're a loving God. If you don't accept our tshuva, we're going to kill our wives and our children. Trying to use the fact that God is merciful and threaten Him to accepting their tshuva. And that's so messed up. Because if he's a merciful God, you don't need to do that. You could just say you're sorry and say, I'm never going to do it again, and cry to him and change your ways. And he'll accept it because he's merciful. But they can't get that, because since they're crooked and they're cruel and they're not merciful, even knowing that God is merciful, when they try to now carry that into practice, they're going to warp that and now threaten God with a knife, saying, oh, because you're merciful, if you don't accept the truth, we're going to kill our wives and our children. So the only way, it's not enough just to know that Hashem is Hashem, Hashem Kerachem V'Chanun. A person has to make himself that way, and only in that way will he end up having the proper picture of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. One of the interesting things that we see in the Parsha is the method that Avraham Avinu used to be Makar of the world and to spread belief in Hashem Echad to the world. Here are people that are spread out already. I don't know how many, tens of hundreds of thousands of people, whatever, by now. And they're all serving different forms of Avodah Zarah. And Avraham Avinu has to spread the word of belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu and explain to people what that is. At a time that they didn't have internet, he couldn't send out mass anythings, and he couldn't you know, hang up signs in enough places. So what did he do? So what Chazal described, and Rav Yashiv spells it out even more clearly, he says that basically Avraham Avinu built a free hotel system over all the roads getting everywhere. And whenever somebody would get to a place that there, you know, for a while there hasn't been a place you could rest, Avraham Avinu had set up another place for where you could sleep, you could eat, rest, bathe, and everything was for free. And he would train the people in all these places how to take care of people and how to make them happy and what to serve them and to go out of your way and make them happy. A massive enterprise of Achnasas Orchim all over the place. And Rashi in the Parsha says, is in the Pasuk, it says, Vayital Eshel Be'er Shava Vayikra Sham B'Shem Hashem Kel Olam. Avram built this Eshel, a place of eating and drinking and sleeping, and he called out the name of Hashem. What does that mean, Rashi says? That they would come, they would eat and drink, and then they would want to pay him, and they would say, how much does it cost? And what do I need to now do in return? And he would say, nothing. I just wanted to make you happy. I just wanted to give to you. But thank God, thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he's the one that gives us all the food in the world. So what was this method that Avram was using over here? So I remember I remember once in psychology class, they were teaching about different experiments that were done. And one of the experiments we learned about with Dr. Stewart, I don't know if she's still there, but was by Harry Harlow with the mother ape, like the wire mother ape experiment. And I don't remember exactly how it goes, but this guy, he would have these like baby apes, and right away from birth, he did an experiment where some of them he gave no mother to. Some of them he gave like a wire mother, some like mother made out of wires with like a bottle stuck in the middle. Another one was wires covered by like comfortable blankets and a bottle on it. And then also regular mothers. And one of the things that he demonstrated with the results of this test is according to how much warmth and attention that they got from their mother and how much comfort, that completely changed their ability to communicate with other apes, to play with them, to bring children together with another one of them, to function in this world, to be a happy, healthy ape. They needed to, from the beginning of their life, in the critical period of the first 90 or so days, receive that warmth and security from a mother that could return it. And one of the things that we see from here is that a person needs to learn an emotion in order to be able to have that emotion. He needs something to initially elicit it by himself in order to then project it onto other people and to be able to use it with other people. Avraham Avinu understood that these are people that all their life is just taking, selfishness, snowman amora people, just what's in it for me, what can I gain out of it, everything was just like business thoughts and how to make our lives more comfortable and better. And to fathom the concept that there could be a being that created an entire world and just to give, just to give to you, and there's nothing you could really do for them in return. And this whole world is an act of giving. They can't fathom that. They can't swallow it. They can't grasp such a concept unless they first receive without having to pay anything in return. And he made this Hachnasas Orchim to give them a taste of what it means to receive from somebody that doesn't want anything back from you. You don't have to pay them. They just love you. They're giving you way more than you'll ever give them back. And then he said, now that you got that, now bench. Now say Birkat HaMazon on the food that I gave to you, and thank the God that gave you your life and the all the food that it is that you're eating. The Gemara in Sukkah quotes a pasuk in Shir HaShirim that refers to a bas nediv. And Chazal say, what's the nediv referring to? What's the bas nediv? It's referring to Avraham Avinu. Now, a nediv is a giver. And when Rashi now wants to explain, how does the Gemara know that nediv, the giver, is referring to Avraham Avinu? What would you expect Rashi to say? This is in Sukkah Mem Tes. You would expect Rashi would say, well, we know that Avraham did tremendous chesed. He did Hachnasas Orchim, and he davened on behalf of the people of Sodom. Something from his acts of chesed. Rashi doesn't say that. In what way was Avraham a giver? Shenidavo libo lahakir esboro. He gave of his heart to recognize and be aware of the Creator. One of the biggest things that gets in the way of living in the world with God consciousness, with realizing that there's a God and He gave us our life and we have to live with an awareness of that all the time, what gets in the way of that is self-centeredness, being into oneself. A person can imagine you just go into somebody's house, start to open their fridge, eat their food, lie in their beds, move around the furniture, play your own music, take over the place, get angry at the guy that owns it, that's telling you, no, don't do that, and do it like that. So that's when somebody's living in this world, never asking, wait, who does this belong to? Who opened their door and brought me in here and gave me all of these things? How does he want me to use this place? So if somebody doesn't think like that, that's self-centeredness. That's selfish. That's fully focused within oneself, always looking to make themselves more comfortable and feel pleasure. And one of the most basic things that goes into the ability to see a Kadosh Baruch Hu and to live in the right way is to give of one's heart to recognize that somebody did all this for me. And that's going to be sourced in Midos. One of the main things that's going to be sourced in is Midos. And if somebody is incapable or unwilling to acknowledge that I don't own my own life, I don't own myself, I owe everything to a being that gave to me, if it's hard for them to accept that, then it's going to be hard for them to believe in a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So it's sourced in our Midos, a lot of a person's ability to have emunah in a Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's why the Gemara in Sukkah also later on says, if somebody has the Midah of Chesed in truth, you can know that they have Yiras Shamayim. Because Chesed and Yiras Shamayim really go together. They're not two separate Midos. The ability to truly see Hashem in your life, it comes from the same part within your heart that's able to be aware of other people, able to see outside of oneself, and then along with that you also see, wow, there's somebody that I owe everything to, that I have to live according to the way that he wants me to.